Hi, everybody. This is Josie Edwards, and I'm coming to you live from my basement. I have a little recording studio in my basement, and so that is where I am, and nooked in a little corner. I apologize if there's any background noise, particularly like if the heat turns on. I normally turn all of those things off when I'm recording, but recently I did that and forgot to turn it back on, and we couldn't figure out why it was 59 degrees in our house until I remembered. So I'm trying not to do that until I can be sure that I'll remember to turn it back on. I hope everyone's doing well. Currently, where I am, we are bracing for a big snowstorm. So that's the big news around here. So I am doing this AMA in response to gaining 250 followers. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And so I will just go through. I got some questions. And so I will go through and answer them to the best of my ability. I am a little verbose, if you can't tell. So bear with me a little bit, please. Okay. So the first question I got was, if you could travel back in time and tell your 13-year-old self one thing, what would it be? I think I have sort of two responses for that. One is I have faith that everything happens the way that it's supposed to happen. So I don't know that I would mess with fate that way. But if it was like mandatory, I think the thing that I would go back and tell my 13-year-old self, and it's the advice I would give anyone at any age, at any point in their life, is start figuring out who you want to be as fast as possible. And start taking off what other people put on you or that you should be or tell you that you are. Because a lot of times those things aren't helpful, because if they're negative and you believe them, then you don't try. Or if they're positive and you don't feel that they're true, that can be damaging too. So really the advice that I would give anybody, including my 13-year-old self, is figure out what you want and figure out who you want to be. And start moving in that direction. Okay, next question. Cake, ice cake. Okay, I'm sorry. I think the question is supposed to be cake, ice cream, or pie. And without question, ice cream, ice cream, ice cream. It is my favorite food. But it's so if we had to do a murder, fuck, or kill. Oh, sorry, what is it? I'm going to kill everybody. Is it murder, fuck, marry, right? So I would murder pie, fuck cake, and marry ice cream. And yes, I did just do that. I just did murder, fuck, marry with cake, ice cream, and pie. Oh, okay. This is a good question. Can I remember the first erotic audio I ever listened to? No. Just by virtue of the fact that I stumbled onto erotic audio, it wasn't something I was particularly looking for. I think maybe watching porn and heard a man moaning, and I didn't realize it, but it really did something for me. And so I think maybe I probably just Googled man moans or something like that, and Literotica popped up, and I might have even just Googled sex sounds. And so then I just started listening, and I think I went to the top 10, top 10 this week. There's the little, in Literotica, there's a little panel on the side, and started listening to audios. And some of them were good and some just weren't quite to my taste, but it was really I just thought it was such an interesting way of exploring a sexuality and human relationships. So don't remember anything in particular. I mean, I found artists that I liked and listened to their catalog, but I don't know. I can't tell you which is the first one I read, because I just don't know. What do you smell like? I think maybe that question is, do I wear perfume? I'm going to take it that way. Or what kind of perfume do I like? So I love perfume. I probably have 25 bottles of perfume. I kind of have a collection of it. I don't wear it every day, but I do. I don't know. It's a weird thing. I like a little bit of perfume. It kind of finishes, if you're getting ready, it kind of finishes off the whatever it is that you're wearing or whatever. And I actually have a favorite perfume that I've had probably for close to, 30 years. It's funny, my mother collected perfume, and so I always wanted my own. And so she bought this perfume, and she hated how it smelled on her. Because, you know, just perfume is chemistry. And so some people's chemistry just doesn't work well with certain things, and so this didn't work well with hers. And so I think she gave it to me to placate me, and it just turned out that when I wore it, it smelled really good. And so I have you know, worn it on special occasions and things like that. It's kind of like my signature scent. They don't make it anymore, and I've never met anyone that wears it. It's a pretty heavy scent. I mean, you can only like do one little bit of it, but it's, yeah. And it's weird because like whenever I'm going into a situation where I want to be more myself, or I want to kind of be grounded in who I am, I'll wear it. I mean, it kind of reminds me of who I am at my core, like where I started. But on a whole, I like the way that roses smell. So like a lot of my body wash and lotion and stuff like that smells like roses, because I do like that smell. Okay, what are my favorite books? So this is a little boring, but I really, it depends on like my mood. A lot of the books that I've read as an adult are just like on kind of like the nonfiction side that talk about motivation and creativity and how people work and how they think, and people who are operating at a really high level, how they're doing what they're doing, or that kind of a thing. That stuff fascinates me. And so I listen to a lot of those books. On the fiction side, there are a lot of books that have resonated with me. There's the Wally Lamb books. Wally Lamb's is a novelist that his books are just interesting in that there's kind of like an echo to them for me, where they stick with me. They leave me with something that other books don't, in the sense that like I'll leave liking the main character but feeling bad about the fact that I like them, or disliking them but feeling bad that I don't like them. It's just a really interesting the way that he crafts a book. And as far as voice is concerned, I love Gillian Flynn, like how she her character's voices in her books are just, to me, they're just like electric. Like I can't put them down because of the way that I gravitate to her writer's voice. So those are books. Movies. I have a pretty standard fare of like 90s, 80s and 90s, like romantic comedy movies that I love. You know, I'm a big creature of habit. So when I want to kind of go back and feel comforted, I will go back to the things that comforted me or entertained me as a kid. So like Dirty Dancing and Pretty Woman and When Harry Met Sally is in my top. It's way up there as far as it could be in my top five, When Harry Met Sally. I love the writing. I think Billy Crystal is amazing. Best in Show is probably in my top three. It's like a mockumentary spoof, so it's done by the same people that did Spinal Tap. It's one of the, and actually I love that movie so much, I started watching Schitt's Creek in its first season, and no one else was watching it, and I just loved Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy so much in Best in Show that I started watching Schitt's Creek because I love them. And yeah, that movie is just, it's the kind of movie where it's so beautifully like layered with comedy that I can watch it. I've watched it probably 25, 30 times. And every time I watch it, I find another thing that one of the comedians has done that's nuanced their performance to make it funny. It's just that kind of thing where it seems kind of spoofy and, you know, on the surface kind of silly because there is a lot of silliness in it, but there's how things are crafted to be fun. It's unreal. So, and there are a lot kind of by that group of people. There's, I think, Waiting for Guffman, which is about a community theater doing a sesquicentennial show, and they think a big Broadway producer is coming to watch it to maybe pick it up and take it to New York. So it's how, but it's all in that mockumentary style, so that the actors are talking to the camera like they're in a documentary. And then there's, if I want to cry, it's like Steel Magnolias, Terms of Endearment, and The Way We Were. And man, The Way We Were, that that was one that I watched like a lot in high school, and no one else watched it really. I didn't have anyone to like talk to about it, and then all of a sudden they used a storyline in Sex and the City, and I was like, oh my god, someone else has watched this movie, because it'll just rip your heart out. I do, in entertainment, I like a little bit of tortured love, but that was just, that's, it's gut-wrenching. The end of that movie is pretty gut-wrenching. It's like the most gut-wrenching movie you can watch where someone doesn't die, right? I mean, like, Terms of Endearment, Steel Magnolias, spoiler alert, somebody dies, and that's part of the sorrow in it. The Way We Were is just really just about two people who love each other, but the differences in who they are too strong, so they can't be together. It's really kind of interesting thing. Okay, and date ideas. Okay, so to me, so I'm married, and we don't get a lot of time, FaceTime. For me, it's just about, it's about FaceTime, so it's about being able to chat and check in and be a person with them and not like a parent or a an employee or the kind of things, because, you know, you can get into being married and you sort of have a role and everybody's working towards a common goal and you forget that that is a person who you like sitting over there and you like having conversations with them. And so date night for me, from a long-term relationship standpoint, is just FaceTime. I like to be out in the world to a degree, so some of it is just about experiencing things and then having that commonality and being able to laugh about it later. So going and learning something or doing something interesting and then having that person with you to experience with you is really the ultimate date, which I don't know if I could be more vague, but I'm trying to think of an example, like a, you know, beer tasting or a wine tasting, or, you know, just going and doing something that you haven't done before with this person and then gauging whatever it is you learn or whatever it is you experience, what they bring to it, how they perceive it. And I love that. That to me is the ultimate date. Okay. So now, okay, my favorite color is red. I love the color red. Okay, let's see. I got some Reddit questions. Okay, so this is from someone who is looking for a relationship. So I do a lot of GFE and comfort audios. It's kind of the crux of the stuff that I do. And so they like my work, and they are just, were curious about the fact I am married and monogamous, and so I had some questions about, like, with what I do is reflected in my work. So the first question is married life really as my audios make it seem? Okay, yes and no. There's a couple of things for me. So if you think of an audio as a snippet, like a moment in time, right? So you're capturing this couple, or you are the listener, you're capturing yourself with your significant other at a moment in time. And most of the time, those moments are positive or giggly, or there's some sort of support function that's showing up. So yeah, so that, have I experienced like that type of intimacy with my partner? Yes. But if you think of it as a snapshot, there is so much more that goes on. I think sometimes when we are, and I don't think you fully understand it until you're there, but because I've done this too, when you're looking for someone or you're looking for a mate, there is this tendency to view them as kind of like a cardboard cutout and to think about all of the places that they will fill. Like think, sorry, God, the pervert in me just was like, I almost couldn't let that one go. And she didn't. But there's this concept of how ideal life will be. And I think that is a little dangerous, because they're not a cardboard cutout. They're not a mannequin. They're a person, and they are bringing all of their person stuff into the equation too. And so, yes, in some ways, it's kind of like someone says, is it easier to be in a couple? In some ways, yes. And in some ways, no. It's just, and it's all a matter of like who you choose and the criteria that you use to choose that person or say yes to that person or continue a relationship with them. So I'm very lucky in that I have a solid relationship, but has it always been like that? No, but that's all part of it. Like, that's all that, like, you, when you accept the contract of a relationship, you, accept all of those things. And if you're not willing to, or you're, the worst is when you're shocked by them, it can cause a problem, because you do have to give things up to, in order to have that, right? In order to get there. And that's the other thing, is the audios that I do are generally created between two people who've been in a long-term relationship, who've worked a lot of things out. So I think if your expectation is to step into a relationship and have that kind of emotional intimacy, I think maybe there's definitely room for disappointment, because it takes a while. It takes a while to trust someone to be that way with them. So yes and no. So that's kind of yes and no. Okay, is being married different from being in a long-term committed relationship? Other than the legal ramifications, no. Not really. Not if you're living with someone. And I actually, someone shared this information with me once. They talked about how a lot of people will be in a long-term, like a long, long-term relationship. Like, you know, they've been living together for 7 years. Then they get married, and then 6 months later, they get divorced. It's because, I think, my assessment is that they thought that marriage would change things. And it doesn't. People, the person that is with you, whether you're on an altar, professing your undying love for each other, or you're living together and you're not married, that is the person you are with. So if the expectation is that the concept of marriage is going to change anything, I think that that's a little dangerous. It's kind of like when you have a birthday and someone calls you and they're like, oh, how does it feel to be 40? And you're like, well, it feels like it felt to be 39, you know, that that kind of thing. And I don't want to say it's invisible, because it obviously I'm married, so it matters to me. But that's just my preference. I don't think, because I think the amount of work is the same. And I will say this, if you're in a relationship, and this is another mistake I have seen some people make based on this whole, like, getting married thing. So, like, a lot of people will, they'll identify a mate, and they'll say, then they try to retrofit themselves to be the person that person would want, to attract that person. And that never, never works, because you will have to show up as yourself at some point, or you're just going to be miserable. I mean, I'm not really sure I've ever met anybody who has to configure who they are to be liked by somebody who's happy. And so what I'll see a lot of is, like, people will be engaged and they're, like, running themselves ragged, doing all this stuff, and they, you know, maybe they're doing all the cooking and all the laundry, and they're doing all the, you know, they're all the errand running. They're just being this ideal, wonderful, amazing person. Nice, if that's who you want to be. I think of marriage as a contract, or any long-term relationship as a contract. Like, those are the invisible items in the contract. When you're doing that, you can't say that you're going to be one thing on one side, or show up as one thing on one side, and then with the intention of changing it on the other side. It's just not fair to you. It's not fair to your mate. So every little thing that you do in a relationship, you're adding to your contract. Hold on, let me get something to drink. So be very careful. You know, show up as yourself. Like, if you don't like to cook, don't cook gourmet meals. Other than to say, look, I'm not going to do this very often, but I love you and I want to do this for you. That's, you know, that's a different thing than cooking a gourmet meal every night just because you think that's who they want you to be. Show up as who you are. And then let the other person decide. And that's heartbreaking, and that's a really, really hard lesson. But it's a lesson that I think is better learned up front than spinning your wheels. And I think that causes a lot of problems down the road. All right, so I do want to say this. No relationship is perfect, and that is true. But also, it's my firm belief that marriage or any real committed relationship is just a crapshoot. Like, you don't really... really know. You know, there's this kind of bullshit when you're getting married that people are like, how do you know that this is the one? You don't. You really don't. In that moment, they're the right person for you. But, you know, you're committing your life, hopefully, to this person. You don't know what life's going to throw at you. And you don't know how you're going to respond to it, or how they're going to respond to it. The hope is that you'll pay careful attention and you will grow in the same direction. But even with the most careful consideration and the most respectful, loving relationship, sometimes it just doesn't work, and that's okay. You can happen to be lucky and have a great relationship, but you could just very much have had the opposite. I think there's so much pressure to have this kind of binary thing of, like, it works or it doesn't, and I don't think that that's the purpose of relationships. I think that when you're trying to find a mate, the most important thing is you find the qualities that are the most important to you, and what you understand is, if there are qualities in that person that concern you, think really, really, really hard about it because it's not going anywhere. Kind of like I said, that person is that person. That's not going to change. And you shouldn't want to change them if you love them. I mean, there are small little things about people, but if there are big, you have big issues with who they are, or what's important to them, or then you gotta think real, real hard about whether or not it's where you want to be and who you want to be with. Okay, next question. Okay, so how long did it take to find the relationship that I am in? Well, if you had asked me when I found the relationship that I am in, I would have said too damn long. And now that I've been in this relationship for 15 years, and I love my husband, so this is nothing on him, but not long enough. And I think the wisdom that I would impart on my single self is to just not fret so much. I think I got so wrapped up in being afraid that I wasn't going to find somebody that I just started to get like nervous. And I had a string of relationships where I just let myself get undervalued. I just let the men that I was in relationships with treat me poorly and in ways that I wouldn't have treated them that way. The expectation was that they wouldn't treat me that way, but it was just whole like, oh my God, this might work. And that retrofitting thing, that's a lot of what I'm talking about. And gratefully they didn't love me. Like there's a part of me that's like, thank God they didn't turn around and tell me that they wanted a relationship because I don't know where I would be. But I had worked myself into a place where I stepped back because I knew that it was not working for me. I was doing things that were harmful to me emotionally and allowing myself to be hurt emotionally and taking a step back to really think about what I wanted and knowing that and then the next relationship, I was not going to accept anything less than what was right for me. And that was actually when it came in. I was reminded of this by someone recently because I think I've lost that, not in the relationship sense, but in other ways, that life knows what it's doing and things show up when they're supposed to. Every time I've done that, I stepped back and just decided that life knew what it was doing. It did it rewarded me. I just see a lot of people, I've had a lot of friends who, I call it forcing life. So you just are in such a hurry to check the boxes, right? You're just in such a hurry to like, oh my God, if I just get that person, that it always ends poorly because, again, like what I said, they turned themselves into something and nobody can keep up that ruse. You want somebody who you can be like totally comfortable with, like in a way that blows your mind. And there are points in my relationship now that I like something will happen and I'll do something or say something and I'll think, how can you possibly still love me after that? And, but man, that's like the greatest feeling in the world is to feel that safe with someone, to be exactly who you are. And they're like little picadillos, like, you know, you don't pick up your towels and shit and I'll get irritated with you and maybe we'll snap at each other. But at the core of it, there's no question that you don't have to question that somebody loves you that way. And that will not happen for you until you give up on trying to procure. It doesn't mean that you don't open yourself up to people and talk to people. I met my husband in a very unorthodox way. My dad introduced me to him because I was home on a Christmas break and just thought we would go on a couple dates. And I actually did not like him at first, to be completely honest with you. But the cool thing about, and I was already over men. So the cool thing about that was I got to show up literally as myself because I had nothing to lose. The weirdest thing is if you had told me like then that this was going to be the love of my life, I might have played it differently. But the way that I played it was, and I didn't, okay, that was the other thing. This play it meaning no games. Like I just wasn't going to put up with any bullshit, the like not calling back and all that stuff. I just wasn't going to do it. And I just approached this relationship beyond any other so very differently. Now, I don't know the other side for men, right? I don't know how that works. I do know that when he pursued me, though, the way that he pursued me was so different than any way that I had ever been pursued before. Like he was unstoppable. If I couldn't do something this, he would work his way around and make it so that I did. He made it happen. And there were just no excuses. And there was, for me, there was no reservation in saying, and not in an unkind, bitchy, I'm not advocating being a bitch because that's, you know, or putting people through their paces to make them prove something to you. That's games. We're not playing games. We're playing honesty. So we're saying, when you don't call me back, that is a boundary for me that I will not accept. That's different than playing a game and, you know, like, I'm not going to call you for 3 days and all that bullshit. So, yeah. So I think the it's just being honest and figuring out, you know, who you want to be and not being afraid. I think that's the other thing, is being afraid. If I come out as who I am, is anybody going to love me? Because that's really the question, right? If I, like, don't do the thing, if I don't do the posturing and the all this stuff, is anybody really going to like this me? And I think the answer is probably more is yes, more in that way than in the way where you're putting on. And because, again, you can't, unless it's you, you're not going to be able to keep it up. So my recommendation is start with you. You know, start with figuring out who you are and really, really liking that person. And then meeting people, but maybe not with the supreme intention of becoming anything romantic, but just learning from them and being interested in them and, you know, things that you like to do. Do they enjoy doing them? That's where I would start. If I could give any advice about meeting people, you start with yourself. Start with yourself and then work from there. Do I think that there are opportunities to find true love like I have? Yes, I do. I absolutely do. But I think that it's a matter of trusting that there's something bigger that knows what it's doing and will not give you what you want and need until you're ready. And in the meantime, and this is advice I would have given my 20-something self, in the meantime, just enjoy the ride and don't be afraid that it's never going to happen. Enjoy your own company. Because I will say that when I started focusing on what I wanted and who I was, that's when I started to sort of attract people to me. So, favorite part of a man's body. My favorite part, like, visually to look at, is there is, like, a line from, like, the back of their neck, like, to their shoulder, that line right there. I don't know what it is about it. And their hand. I mean, I love men's hand. My husband has beautiful hands. But that line from the back of their neck, I don't know what it is, but I just find that so sexy. Like, kissing, I like to kiss the inside of the neck. And then there's this one little tiny place on the temple that's, like, really soft, that's really fun to kiss. So those are, like, my favorite. I'm, like, looking at a man, and I see that, like, line in the back of their neck. I don't know. It just does something to me. Oh. Oh, okay. So have I ever had a one-night stand? No, I have not. And there's a very good reason for that. I'm not a very touchy person with people that I don't know. I have to be very, 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 very comfortable with you to let you touch me. And so that kind of negates any kind of a quick hookup. I'm like a cat in some ways. Like, I'm very warm to the people that I'm warm to, and I don't want to be touched by people that I don't know. And then the other thing is, you know, not knowing someone, I think about, like, I don't know what your bathroom looks like. Like, is your bathroom dirty? I feel like if your bathroom's dirty, your dick might be dirty. And if I don't know that about you, I'm not going to let you put that body part in mine. So there's that piece of it too. You know, just not knowing enough about someone to know if you want to get naked with them. So, yeah, no, I've never had one. And I don't know that, I mean, obviously I'm married now, but I just, yeah, the appeal is not there for me. So no, I have not. Okay, so I am going to also answer just a few questions from Bunny's questionnaire. What is my favorite audio tag to perform and write? I like Friends to Lovers. I do like that one a lot. I like Confessions, and that one's pretty fun. And anything that makes people feel good, like, I, you know, that kind of comfort makes me happy. Can I do a handstand against a wall? I used to be able to. I might be too old for that now. Summer, winter, spring. Am I a morning shower or night shower person? I am a morning shower person, bath night person. I love to take baths. In fact, on my Instagram, I have a little bath time contemplation thing that I do, little videos. Let's see. Was my first kiss actually a good one? This is a great story. Well, it's a little cringy. I mean, it makes me cringe, but I think it's kind of sweet. So my first kiss was with my best friend, who was male. And I had never been kissed before. I was about 13 years old, and he was like a mouth whore. And so he'd actually been making out with my friend just for fun. He was hanging out with me, and I think we were up in my room watching television. And I don't know why he was laying on top of me. It's a weird Now that I think of this, it's like a weird thing, but he was laying on top of me and our foreheads were together. And we were just talking because you can hear I talk a lot and he talks a lot. Someone said a word with the M sound. I think one of us, I think it's probably me, said we should probably stop saying M words. And then we just started saying the word more over and over again until we ended up kissing each other. So it was kind of sweet. Yeah, that's a good memory. That's a good first kiss memory. Am I a more extroverted or introverted person? I am both, depending on the situation. I would count myself as introverted in the sense of the classical definition of introverted versus extroverted is whether how you get your energy, right? So if you're a person who is drained by being around other people, you're considered introverted. And if you're a person who gains energy from other people, you are extroverted. And it depends on the time for me. I do know this about myself, and I have known this for my whole life, and this is why I would say leaning towards the introverted side. I have needed 30 minutes to myself completely alone for my entire life. So I will have to recuse myself when we go places and visit people and just have the 30 minutes to myself. Otherwise, I am just a nightmare. Like, I'm just a grumpy asshole. But there are occasions, though, where I will be out and under the right circumstances where I am energized by being around people in the moment. And then I go home and I'm like, I have to recharge the battery. If I had a stressful or crappy day, I take a bath. Take a bath is pretty much always the answer. What skill do I really want to learn? I don't know. How to not care how people respond. That's a good skill. Not care about a response is a really, really good skill. What is a non-sexual act someone can do that I find very attractive? My husband can configure anything, so he can build anything. So watching him build things, that turns me on, watching him do that thing. Okay, so last question. The nicest compliment anyone has ever given me. So I had a high school boyfriend tell me once that I made everything fun. And that was, like, to me, just the greatest compliment, because that is kind of what I strive for. I just feel like we can be put in some really shitty, shitty situations as humans and get a lot of slog work. And if you can try to find the humor or the joy or the fun in it, it makes it a little lighter. And so, yeah, I like that, because I like for life to be an adventure, even if it's just like going to the grocery store and you get a story about a crabby old woman who, you know, got mad at you about your cart or something, you know, like those kind of things. I like that. I like that. All right. So thank you so much for being even remotely interested in this and for listening this long. Sorry. We're close to the holidays, so I just will wish everyone a happy holiday season. I know that this one's going to be tough for a lot of people. You're going to not be able to be around people who they're usually around, and it's kind of the culmination of a really, really tough year for everyone. So sending you all kinds of loving hugs and warm wishes. And please take care of yourself, because it's important and you're important. And until we meet again.